And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week we saw a general Republican retreat from democracy. We have in 43 states out of the 50 states more than 250 bills introduced by Republicans to restrict the vote in one way or another. We have one of the leaders of the Republican Party in Arizona saying, actually, it's true that the effect of these bills is to keep people from voting, but not everybody should vote. Apparently, the Republicans have the lesson that they've drawn from the last election is that if people vote, they lose. The funny part about it is their losses are, generally speaking, not attributable to the fact that more people voted. But nonetheless, they want to guarantee that fewer people vote than have ever voted before, or at least than have voted in the last election. And so we have this general retreat from democracy on the part of the Republicans. Isn't this, in the final analysis, counterproductive for the Republicans?
Well, we'll have to see. But this is nothing new. I had a discussion this week with someone who's involved in politics in Harrisburg, and I mentioned to him Paul Weyrich's statement back in the late 70s about how Republicans shouldn't want people to vote when people vote that they lose. He made a mockery of this was to a Christian group of he called them the goo-goos, the good government people. In other words, we don't want good government. We don't want people voting. We want to be able to control as a minority. And certainly that's, you know, we've discussed Nancy McLean's book. That was the Koch brothers theory, that our ideas cannot win in the competition. So we try to rule as a minority. And over the last number of years, what we've seen is these attempts by the Republicans to stifle voting for however it is, in order to maintain control as a minority, because they can't win the battle of ideas. Their policies aren't popular with the people. We've talked about the fact that they went to such great lengths to stop the Affordable Care Act. And before that, they went through great lengths to stop Medicare. And before that, they went through great lengths to stop Social Security. And the reason is that their philosophy, that government isn't there to help, is wrong. But
no, that's not their philosophy. Their philosophy is government isn't there to help anybody but them.
And God forbid it helps the majority of the people, because what they realize is once you put these programs in, like be it Social Security, be it Medicare, be it the Affordable Care Act, people like it. People realize how good it is for them. And it stifles this Republican ethos on there. So they've been engaging in this kind of conduct for a long time, and I think it's gotten worse than just the electoral. We can talk about the electoral. They've really retreated on a whole host of things. You know, there was a time when, not that long ago, 20 years ago, when the Voting Rights Act was being renewed, the 1965 Act periodically had to be renewed, although I don't understand why they just don't make it a permanent thing. But it passed the Senate 98 to nothing. You know, the Republicans were as on board as the Democrats. And now you see a whole series of things over the last couple of years, where large swaths of the Republican Party, or even smaller swaths, but significant ones, are voting in ways that are just inexplicable. In 2020...
No, they're not inexplicable. They're just bad.
They're bad.
You think they're inexplicable because you think that everybody's good. How about this? Not everybody's good.
Yeah, well... Yeah, I can't argue with that. But let me give our listeners some examples. In 2020, 164 Republicans in the House of Representatives voted against a resolution condemning anti-Asian racism. And that's something that, of course, popped up again this year. But this year, this week, 172 Republicans in the House voted against the Violence Against Women's Act. A dozen Republicans in the House voted against giving gold medals and awards to Capitol Police who fought to protect those people during the insurrection. 14 Republicans in the House voted against condemning the anti-democratic coup in Myanmar. What we've really seen, and we've seen it in foreign policy as well, as it's coming out, is that the Republican Party has become enthralled with authoritarianism, and they have gotten so much admiration for it that they've lost the vision of democracy. They were willing to back Donald Trump's authoritarian ideas and his policies. There was a time when none of us would ever have thought that the Republican Party would stand for anything that supported anything that came out of the Soviet Union or the former Soviet Union. And now we have members of the Republican Party, prominent members, actively parroting Putin-esque propaganda, Putin's policies, and actually this week rooting for Vladimir Putin against the President of the United States. If you turn on Fox, you hear this. And it's just a capitulation of whatever principles the Republicans had in foreign policy. But again, it gets to the authoritarianism, why they wanted to delegitimize the last election, because they couldn't win it, so they wanted to do things. You know, you mentioned Arizona. Arizona had a bill that said that the legislature could overrule the votes of the people after the last election. This is an entirely... I don't know, new, but it's a foreign concept in American policies, and they're getting people to buy into this.
You think it's a new innovation in American policy? I don't think so. I think that the Republican Party, at least throughout the 20th century, was a party that was unabashedly at the service of big business and damn everybody else's interests. End of story. And that is what we regard as the sane wing of the Republican Party, not the populist wing represented by Trump and the Tea Partiers and the No Caucus, the party of Toomey, our own guy.
Yeah, this week Toomey held up a bill that would have prevented bill collectors from getting their hands on COVID relief statements because we wanted the people to spend their money locally and to bolster the economy. Toomey's idea was that the businesses, he's not wrong that they had legitimate claims. The question is whether they could effectuate taking this money before the people got to spend it on food or clothing or shelter.
They could take the same attitude toward the moratorium on evictions. People owe rent. Everybody knows people owe rent, but at the moment, a lot of people can't pay the rent, so you can't get evicted.
Well, we have
Toomey's approach would be: hey, you owe rent, you get evicted if you don't pay it.
Well, we had in the the Trump administration, Betsy DeVos, who would allowed these colleges that had effectively defrauded their students to continue to collect loans from these students. The Obama administration had put a stop to that, and Betsy DeVos said, no, yeah, they're fraudulent, but these businesses, they get to fleece their, they've already fleeced the students out of their education. Now we're going to fleece them out of the money that they owe to these schools for not giving them an education.
Well, it's consistent.
But there was, you know, there were always several different wings of the Republican Party. You know, you mentioned the business wing. That was known a lot as the country club wing of the party. And again, it's interesting that they're now claiming to be the populists. You know, Donald Trump down there in the country club of Mar-a-Lago telling ordinary people that he's really one of them or for them. But you had the foreign policy wing, which was hawkish. Well, actually, it was divided into two things. One, there was the isolationist wing, and then you had the hawkish wing of the party, the neocon wing. And there was always at least a saying that partisanship went stopped at the shoreline, that Americans would unite against foreigners. And as I started to say, you know, with Putin in particular, that's no longer the case, that the Republicans are aligning against the administration and against America in those, in that regard. And people like Rudy Giuliani and Ron Johnson, or they call him QAnon Johnson, openly, Devin Nunes, who was the congressman from Southern California that got convicted?
Hunter.
Hunter. Duncan Hunter. And there was another one there too. You would never have thought of these.
Duncan
things.
Hunter's the guy who said, "I didn't steal the money; my wife did."
My wife did, yeah. Right. It's amazing what we're seeing now, jaw dropping, how they've, Republicans have retreated from whatever principles that they've ever claimed to have on things as the flag waving American Party. Except,
well, haven't you pointed out? I know you did to me. I think you have to others. That the Republican legal people, the lawyers, the legal theorists, are united now behind a legal theory that they've invented that claims that the executive branch should not have the right to set regulatory rules.
Right. Yeah. I've said that the concept against government has coalesced around two trends that emerged in the sixth. Well, one emerged before that, but against two trends. On one hand, they've emerged against the government on racial issues. That, you know, the government forced people to integrate restaurants and hotels and bus stations, and made people actually send their kids to school with people of different colors. That's one part of it. And the other part was what you just talked about, the administrative state, which made companies and businesses be more fair in their dealings with the public, that they have to abide by the hiring practices that don't discriminate, that they have to abide by keeping products safe, or that they have to abide by not polluting the atmosphere. And the privatizing of profits and the socializing of the costs. And we had set up, beginning in the 30s, an administrative state to deal with that. which make rules. And of course, in the 60s, we expanded that, and we expanded it with the EPA, and we expanded it in the 90s with the Americans with Disabilities Act and whatever. And, you know, you've got on one hand, one group of business people, a large group of business people that don't want to have to spend the money. They think that their entire purpose is to maximize profits at any cost to someone else. And then you have even the worst group of that, the sociopathic group, which doesn't care about who they harm. You know, the Sackler family with Purdue Pharmaceuticals, or the fellow who, you know, raised the price of diabetes medication 700 or EpiPens 750%.
Martin Shkreli.
Yeah, Shkreli. That kind of leadership. Or the banks. You know, Bernie Sanders once said that the business model of the big banks is fraud and theft, and roundly criticized for it. But, you know, again and again, you see it. You see these banks being admonished or finding out that they do things. I can't remember what we talked last week about the a couple of the big banks, Wells Fargo and Citibank, for instance, got the COVID relief money, but held back depositing it, or at least are alleged to have held back depositing it into the accounts of their customers for several days, so they could work the vig on it. You know, they could make money on holding billions of dollars.
Without regulation, even if laws are passed, companies have the opportunity to not follow the law and get away with it. It's as if you didn't pass the law.
It's catch us if you can.
Yeah, catch us if you can. So in that case, if that's widespread, if the Republican effort to prevent the executive branch from regulating, issuing regulations and enforcing regulations, which means no more regulations, if that becomes accepted and that becomes the practice, why vote? I mean, if the people that you vote for, the representatives, don't have the power to make and enforce policy, and if you can't enforce the law, there is no law, then what's the point of electing them?
Well, you're back to authoritarianism.
Yeah.
And the other thing about businesses is they're authoritarian in nature.
Well, they are in nature. Exactly. That's how they work.
They don't, you know, this is the spring season, and if you're a stockholder, and I'm lucky enough to hold a certain amount of stock, you start getting proxy statements from companies to vote on certain things. But the fact of the matter is, it's not really democratic. They put up a slate and say it's either these people or nobody. You know, there's, they pick the boards of directors, and then the boards of directors, I don't vote for the CEO of any of these companies. The board of directors hires the CEO of these companies.
And in most companies, it's the CEO who hires the boards of directors.
Yeah, it's incestuous.
Yeah.
It's incestuous. You know, and also, you know, the business model in many of these companies that cheat, you know, you think about the polluters, like, you know, the coal companies that dump stuff into the rivers, or and other firms that do that. It's catch us if you can. And they get caught. They hire lawyers to drag out the administrative procedures. They pay they you know, wear them down. They pay token fines, and you know, it's always, or almost always, we don't admit anything. We didn't do it, but we'll never do it again.
Right. But they don't have to admit it, you know, because there's an objective standard. When I went to college, I was in various history and anthropology courses, I was taught that a test of a civilization is the life expectancy of the people who live in that civilization. And if you wanted to pose the question, is humanity progressing? My teacher said, well, if you trace the life expectancy of people through the centuries, you find that as social systems evolve, life expectancy improves. Okay, fair enough. That's the test. In the United States, life expectancy is declining, right?
Yeah, it has been. And there's several statistics. The COVID epidemic, of course, which you remember was just a hoax.
Right. It doesn't exist.
It didn't exist, or it was going to go away right away, or we had it under control and all these things.
And it's an attack on freedom to insist that you should be vaccinated.
Or freedom that you shouldn't wear a mask.
Right.
You can't make me wear a mask.
Can't make me not infect you.
Right, yeah. I have the right to infect anybody I want to infect, to play right. Typhoid Mary. The statistics are that the result of that, that the average life expectancy of an American has gone down one full year in the last year. But for minority...
I mean, that's phenomenal in 1 year.
Yeah, it is. For minorities, it's three years for African Americans, and for Hispanics, it's 2 years of life expectancy that's been lost. And actually, the trend in other ways has been bad at the other end of the spectrum, because America, for a number of years now, has trailed the world in infant mortality and in deaths of women in childbirth.
You mean has led the world?
Yeah. Well, led the world, yeah. It's we're nowhere near what more with countries who are considered first world countries have been able to do in those areas.
And it's if the kid manages to survive in infancy, the spread of hunger among children is unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, that's what one of the things that the COVID relief bill was supposed to do, is to help end childhood poverty by giving money to families. What's it, $3,000 for children? So that they
right,
can
and,
feed
and
their
then
kids
you
property.
Have a guy like Toomey and the rest of the Republicans who block that. The law is passed, but they block it because they say, no, that money should be garnished. Pay off your debts first, then live.
Right. Right. Or for, schools. I mean, things have happened. When schools are out, a lot of schools, particularly like the Scranton School District, where maybe the best meal of the day kids get are the government-provided meals at the school. You know, when school was out, when they were only having at-home learning, those kids weren't getting that nutrition. They weren't getting those good meals. And it's still hard to believe it now in the 21st century. My mother was a school teacher, and she became a teacher during the Depression, during the middle of the Depression. She graduated college in 1934. So that was right there when things were pretty close to the bottom or coming off. And she used to say that they fed the kids at school, and a lot of times that was the only meal that they got.
But that's true now.
It's still true. It's amazing. 80 years later, It's still true. Later in life, she became a teacher at the other end of the spectrum for Head Start, for the preschoolers. And again, when she used to go out and having to recruit kids and going into these homes, she said you couldn't believe the poverty and how feeding these kids at school, how important it was for things. And that was 50 years ago in the 1960s. So
and there's no recovery. I mean, it's not like the economy has bounced back. This week's report on how many people newly filed for unemployment insurance, it's really not changed. There's still over 1 million people, one way or another, collecting unemployment insurance and new filers for unemployment insurance. Many more than 1 million getting it, but more than 1 million had just filed this week. It's been that way since the middle of the pandemic, over a year.
Yeah. The amount of continuing claims, and like they keep talking about, it's a K-shaped recovery. Bernie and his banking committee or finance committee, he tried to call in Jeff Bezos talking about how come your wealth in the last year has gone up by over 100, I think it's over $100 billion or something like that. And, you know, between you and Elon Musk.
Elon Musk made $25 billion last Monday.
Yeah. That you've made, the two of you have made more money than flowed to the bottom 40% of Americans in 1 year. You know, the Republicans say, well, that's just the way it is. That's capitalism. But A, that isn't necessarily the way it has to be, or B, the way it should be.
That's exactly right. Although it may be that that is capitalism.
Yeah, well, the government can set a policy. Well, it is and it isn't, because all, it's the blinders that these folks have, because they don't realize that they're in it with every other company and every other business, and that their business in part depends on everybody else doing things that can help them. You know, if people live in poverty, they're not buying things from Amazon. The bottom 40% ain't going to buy any Teslas, whether you like it or not. They just don't see that everyone is interdependent upon someone else. And that was the,
you know, they may see it, but they have very little that they can do about it, because the interests of their particular company are at odds with the interests of the mass of the people. In other words, if they decide that they're going to pay a wage far greater than the wage paid generally speaking, they're going to cut their profit. And if they continue to cut their profit, their investors will pull out, and they will not stay in business.
Well, you know,
that's why you need government to enforce wage regulations.
Yeah, well,
force them all to pay a wage so that the well-to-do, the well-being, the life of the people who have to work and who in the end are the consumers can't be put at the service of ruthless competition.
Well, don't forget, right now we have this fight with Amazon in Alabama over unionizing a warehouse. And I wouldn't be optimistic about it. We've had in Canada, Walmart has shut down. Wasn't it Walmart that shut down stores when they voted to unionize?
Right.
Rather than allow that so people couldn't get a wage. I mean, we're still stuck at a minimum wage that's been there for 12 years. We've talked about that for ad nauseum.
Years and years ago, there was a union called the Textile Workers Union of America. In those days, the cotton textile mills were clustered in the South. The wages were, you couldn't believe what the wage levels were. A worker could work a 40-hour week and come home with less than $40. That's the fact. Black people did not get to work in those factories. It was only for white men and white women. Black women worked as domestic workers in the homes of white workers who freed the white woman to go into the factory so that man and woman worked and together brought home less than $80 a week. Can you imagine what they paid the black domestic worker that made that possible? And yet you could not unionize these places because the bosses just said, we'll close the factory down. And they did.
Yep. Well, that's what started the miners' unions up here. Yeah. The miners had nothing to bring home after they worked and owed their soul to the company store.
Yeah. Well, what's coming up next week? Because we're coming to an end of our...
Well, we're going to see Biden's holding a news conference. We'll see about that. And spring has sprung. Hopefully the weather will get better. And we're starting to open up... businesses again, although we're going to see, I'm afraid we're going to see another surge.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Stay safe.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City. 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.